Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hundreds of billions of bailout dollars are pouring into Wall Street and U.S. banks. But what about the millions of homeowners behind on their payments, home mortgages underwater, facing foreclosure? Should they get relief? Can the housing market and the economy come back if they don't? And if they do get bailed out, what's the fairness, the lesson in that? This hour, On Point, stopping the foreclosure wave and the push to save homeowners and the economy. Joining me first today from Washington is Diana Olick, real estate correspondent for CNBC and author of the blog Realty Check. Diana, thanks very much for being here. Hello, Diana. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great to have you. Diana, why is everyone increasingly looking with such horror at the big numbers of homeowners facing foreclosure and underwater home values?
Well, you said it. It's underwater home values, Tom. The problem here is that while we were looking for some kind of housing recovery toward the end of this year and into next year, we got our big wrench thrown in that with the economy and the recession. What's happened is that people who thought they might be able to get out from under this by at least being able to sell their homes just simply can't now because home prices have fallen so far, 18% from their peak, that they're what we call underwater on their loan. That is, that the loan is worth more than the house is worth. And that's sending a lot of people actually walking from their homes. So when we talk about these bailout plans, you have to remember some of these folks don't even want to be bailed out.
Now, the scale of that potential further foreclosure wave, if home prices go down another 10-15%, as economists are projecting they may, has really got people's attention. Is it such a big issue that it could spike, undermine the whole bailout effort that's underway?
Well, it depends on how much the bailout actually helps homeowners. It could definitely. The problem is that there are so many different programs out there right now that have just started that a lot of folks are looking to and hoping that these will fix the problem. You've got, I could run a list of them. You've got the Hope for Homeowners, which is $300 billion worth of loans that the FHA would back, but there are some issues with that. There's the FDIC chairman, Sheila Bair, who is freezing foreclosures from all the IndyMac loans that went bad and lowering interest rates. There's the Hope Now program, which has to do with lenders and servicers getting together, but they have to voluntarily lower principal on the loans. You've got Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just announcing this week at the Mortgage Bankers Conference that they were going to do more to modify the loans that they've invested in. And you've got that big Bank of America Countrywide deal, the settlement, in which they're saying also that they're going to modify loans to the tune of $8 billion. But again, these have just started in just this month, so we have a big question mark right now as to whether or not these are going to work because, as I said, each program has its own flaws.
Diana, do you have the sense that policymakers and maybe ultimately legislators see a political will to support the backstopping, the rescuing of all these homeowners? I mean, after all, it would be a kind of an intervention on their behalf that a lot of other homeowners would not get.
Well, and there's the point. I mean, you saw John McCain, a Republican, get out there and say that he wanted to lower everybody's interest rate to 5.25%. You don't often hear that from a Republican. But, yeah, the politicians see that they've got something bleeding there and they need to stop it. They need to get, but, and again, as you say, though, there is that moral hazard. Why should some people be rewarded for making perhaps irresponsible decisions on their homes? But then again, you've got these homeowners who are responsible and are paying their mortgage, and next door the home goes into foreclosure. All that does is lower the price on their home. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
Diana, we're reading today that something like 19 million homeowners may be underwater by 2010. That is, their mortgage bigger than the value of their home.
Right.
Is there enough money in the bailout plans as currently constructed to throw life rafts to all those homeowners, or some significant portion of them, or are we talking about billions, maybe more here?
Well, but you have to be careful when you throw out those numbers of 19 million or currently 12 million underwater on their homes. Remember, you can be underwater on your home and still pay your mortgage responsibly and still live there. The bulk of Americans live in their home to live in their home, not as an investment per se. That
right.
means, so say I bought my home for, I don't know, $500,000 and now it's worth $450,000. I still love my home. I'm still able to pay my mortgage. My kids are still going to school in the neighborhood. I don't need to sell my home right now, so I'm just going to wait it out. and, you know, the cycle will come around again and my home will begin to appreciate again. It's not that 19 million people need to be bailed out of their homes because they're underwater. It's only those that cannot afford to pay their mortgages. And then, of course, those who choose to walk away. I mean, I was at this conference, the Mortgage Bankers Association conference on Monday, and I heard someone from Freddie Mac say that one of the issues they have in modifying loans is that 45% of the delinquent loans on their books are empty houses. That is, people who have simply said enough and walked away and are willing to take the credit risk, to the credit hit, that is, to just leave the home there because they don't want that investment. But again, a lot of those were investors, not average Americans who just want to live in their home.
Well, meanwhile, big economist looking at this, Martin Feldstein, saying, you know, prices could fall another 10 or 15%. They could keep dropping to much lower levels and take the economy down with them. Alan Blinder at Princeton saying something very similar, that if there's not some way found to put a bottom in here, the whole economy could go down on the back of these falling mortgages, maybe overshoot on the low end, the same way the bubble overshot values on the high end, Diana.
Well, definitely it would overshoot on the low end because you're seeing a lot of fear in the market right now. I mean, there is pent-up demand. We see it. We're seeing housing starts at a lower level than household formation. And that means that there are certainly enough people out there who could fill up many of these homes. They just don't want to. No one wants to catch a falling knife at this point. They don't want to jump in on a home that's just going to lose value. So you do need to put a bottom in prices, and you only do that by stopping the foreclosures. And so, you know, is some kind of blanket bailout plan to stop the foreclosures going to help the market? Sure, but it's going to cost a lot of money, and you have to ask again, whom are you bailing out? And are the lenders, are the servicers of these mortgages going to agree to participate, especially when they have this $700 billion bailout ahead of them from the government, where the government is saying, look, we're going to buy all your loans potentially. Well, why do they take a hit now on the loan when they might get a better deal from the government?
Diana Olick, real estate correspondent for CNBC, author of the blog Realty Check, joining us from Washington. Diana, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I want to turn to New York now, and Daniel Alpert. He's a founding member of Westwood Capital. It's an investment bank. He was, in fact, the investment banker who led the first ever rated commercial mortgage-backed security issue backed by a pool of mortgage loans acquired from a distressed lender. It sounds like it may have been one of the wizards who made the trouble here. But now he's developed a new plan called the Freedom Recovery Plan to help homeowners with troubled mortgages. Daniel Alpert, thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Let's just get it clear first. Were you one of the guys who set up the fancy securitization packages that got us in trouble in the first place? Are you looking for redemption now with a plan to get us out?
not the modern incarnation of residential mortgages. We developed back in 1990 the earliest commercial mortgage-backed securities because at the time the market for commercial mortgage loans was dead. And I guess if I have any degree of expertise, it's in dealing with troubled markets and trying to figure out how to get things back on track.
But here you're looking not at the banks but at the homeowners. As a banker, why are you focused there in this crisis?
Well, what concerns me is that we're going to see the economy slide beyond the point where it can sustain home values, even at what should be an equilibrium price. And looking to that point, Diana just said, it's very important to find a place to put a floor in, not to support prices, but to put a floor in at the point where we believe, and I think a lot of other economists believe, housing should settle out. You know, one thing that I think people need to understand about this subject is you're either on one side of the fence or the other on the following argument. Mm-hmm. And that is, if you believe that this is a cyclical downturn, much of what I'm about to say is not going to make any sense to you. Mm-hmm. But if, on the other hand, you believe that this is the result of an enormous amount of leverage that essentially pushed prices higher on homes beyond the value of shelter, beyond the value of even reasonable speculation with regard to the future price increase of homes, then you really need to understand that the housing market is going to settle back down. And we believe at Westwood that it's going to settle approximately 30% below peak values.
Below where it was. So why not just let it do that? Why intervene? And you're talking about intervention, and we'll describe it after the break here maybe, but Why intervene? Why not just let it nature take its course here?
Well, as home mortgages, remember that home mortgages are not just a question of a guy goes out, buys a home, pays too much for it, and takes on too big a mortgage. There was plenty of that. Mm-hmm. But remember, Americans have been refinancing their homes in droves for a good 5 years. They've been doing that in order to, A, lower their payments because interest rates were low. But beyond that, they were taking out enormous amounts of principal. During 2004, 5, and 6, mortgage equity withdrawals averaged about $650 to $700 billion a year. That's an enormous amount of money. And that money was essentially going into the economy, was actually a lot of it was going directly into consumption. That created enormously higher mortgage balances for many Americans, even Americans who own their home for a very long time. We went from $5.4 trillion in mortgages at the beginning of the decade, and at the peak, we ended up with $11 trillion.
So why bail out people who refinanced, went and bought a boat, maybe two boats, I don't know what, had fun, went out to eat, and now they're in deep trouble? Why should the American government and special terms be brought in to save their bacon?
The moral hazard issue is huge, and the saving of bacon is I guess, to a certain degree repugnant. However, houses are different than other forms of property. If you were talking about commercial property, office buildings, shopping malls, I would agree with you. Absolutely. We don't need to save any developer's bacon. But the fact of the matter is this is where America goes to put its head at night. These are the homes that it lives in, and to the extent you start foreclosing on homes, as Diana pointed out, you're going to end up with an enormous overhang. We already have an enormous overhang, and that's going to drive prices well below where we and many other people feel that they should settle out.
And maybe hurting everybody in the process, even those who played by the straight and narrow kind of old-fashioned rules. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Joined from New York by Daniel Alpert. He's at Westwood Capital, an investment banker there. He's developed a new plan, the Freedom Recovery Plan. And Mr. Alpert, we saw your plan. Joe Nocera wrote it up over the weekend in the New York Times. Sounds pretty interesting. Before you take us into its details, why aren't you satisfied with some of the plans that are on the table already from John McCain, from Barack Obama? Everybody's got a plan these days for homeowners.
Well, it's been very tempting recently to throw a plan out with a dollar number associated with it, you know, $300 billion there, $400 billion here. Mm-hmm. The fact is many of these programs are voluntary in nature. They don't put any mandatory requirements on lenders.
That is voluntary for the banks. They don't have to play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Certainly the HOPE programs, both incarnations, were voluntary foreclosure mediation programs.
What's wrong with that? What's wrong with voluntary?
Well, it hasn't actually produced a volume of results. I mean, there's been scattered results here and there. The fact is that a lot of mortgages in this country are held in large securitization trusts. Mm-hmm. There's no lender on the other side. There's a trustee, generally an institution, a bank, that is responsive only to the bondholders, and the bondholders are the ones that actually own the mortgages indirectly.
And they're not likely to budge if the other guy doesn't, and maybe almost nobody does.
Well, the ownership is so diffuse that it's impossible really to – it's like herding cats. You can't create a situation where, you know, on everybody's mortgage they say, well, gee, should we modify Joe's mortgage? Let's take a vote of, you know, 1,400 bondholders.
So you don't think the voluntary path is going to work? You would come in with a mandatory program. We'll think about that, but describe it for us. What would you do? How would you fix this giant
let's
problem?
Let's just go through the essence of it. Mm-hmm. The first thing is we've been talking a lot about moral hazard just now, but the
issue, the lesson we teach if we bail people out who got in over their heads here.
Exactly. And so any plan adopted to mitigate the situation really needs to address and cause the parties that took unwise risks to also take responsibility for their acts. Mm-hmm. You can't do that perfectly, but you can strive for that goal.
Okay. Homeowner and bank, both take
responsibility. Homeowner and bank, exactly. Mm-hmm. Secondly, as we've just been discussing, keeping people in their homes is the way of keeping a lot of homes off the market. And one of the things you need to do when you speak of the whole foreclosure issue, that issue really comes down to the social disruption, obviously, of having people thrown out of their homes, mm-hmm. and economic disruption, but also the issue of building up massive inventories of homes that will take, you know, a decade to work off.
And send prices down and down, maybe below where they ought to be.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And then the other issue that we try to attack is the costs of adversarial foreclosure. Foreclosure in good times cost approximately 19% of mortgage value. That is the cost of taking it
cost
over
and
legal,
going in, right? Kicking people out, the whole
paying
shebang.
Taxes, mm-hmm. paying back taxes, paying insurance premiums, and then mm-hmm. of course the brokerage commission for reselling the property. Mm-hmm. In modern times, during this crisis, with court times and costs of having grown. We're talking about something on the order of 30% of mortgage value. And while that might be a good thing for lawyers and for real estate brokers, I suppose, the fact is that that's an enormous cost to the economy. And whoever's ending up holding the bag, if it's the government at the end of the day, that's an unnecessary cost for
them.
So
what would you do?
Well, the essence of the plan is to try to rely as little as possible on government and taxpayers. The notion is that if you have a situation where someone can't pay their mortgage, they are in a position where, you know, they're strapped and either they've taken on too much debt, and it might not just be mortgage debt. It could be unsecured debt that they can't pay. They just can't make it work. And I think a lot of Americans are in that position today.
So you're going to come in with the Freedom Recovery Plan, and you're going to mandate, you're going to say what, to homeowners?
Well, we're not going to mandate anything for homeowners. We're going to mm-hmm. say to those homeowners, you can approach your bank, mm-hmm. and you can voluntarily hand over your deed. Now, you're saying, why is that such a great deal for homeowners? Mm-hmm. By itself, it's not. In exchange, what we're saying to the banks is that any homeowner that comes to you and voluntarily surrenders his deed, you are going to grant that homeowner a lease to remain in his home for approximately 5 years. We put a 4 to 6 year window on it.
To stay in the home, but in this case, renting. And this is mandatory to the bank. You say if the homeowner gives you the deed, you're going to have to let them stay there 5 years and rent that home at prevailing market rent.
Right, but only if they give – first of all, only if they're qualifying, and we've excluded investor-owned properties and all sorts of other things that just don't belong in this type of program.
Okay.
So this is just really owner-occupied housing mm-hmm. That's at a very, very high loan-to-value. So we're not, you know, looking to give a guy who only has a 50-cent mortgage on his house
right.
You know, the right to do this. We're
homeowner
really talking
gives
about
up the deed
people.
Then. Homeowner gives up the deed. The bank has to take the deed, and they have to let him stay for 5 years renting at the prevailing market rental rate.
Right. Well, of course, the bank covets the deed. They want the deed. That's mm-hmm. the whole purpose of foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
The lease, however, is a bit of an imposition on them. So you're saying to the bank or the lender, and by the way, when we say bank, we really mm-hmm. have to remember most of these loans are not directly owned by banks. A lot of them are, but not
okay.
Not
lender,
majority. Then.
And at the
right.
end of that 5 years, where the one-time
at the end of the 5 years,
the renter,
the end of the 5 years, we're proposing that the renter, once the market hopefully stabilizes, and it may take that 5 years, hopefully shorter, to
mm-hmm.
stabilize,
mm-hmm.
The homeowner will have the right to buy the home back at fair market value. And what you're effectively doing, what you're saying to homeowners is, look, here's 5 years of respite. The rent that you're going to be paying is going to be less than your mortgage payment. Why is that? Because rents and housing prices disconnected. That was the cause of this whole
right,
problem.
Right.
You know, rents in this country, or rather home prices in this country, have traditionally hovered in a range of 14 times to 16 times rent.
Mm-hmm.
At the peak of the bubble nationally, home prices topped out at 26 times. That's a real bubble.
So going back to a rental level means your monthly payment's going to be significantly less. During that time, something will happen with home values. They could come back up or they could settle lower, but you've got 5 years to kind of anticipate and prepare for that.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of that means that people need to get very serious about taking care of their other debts, their unsecured debts, developing some methods of savings, just the sort of tough love kind of workout that you need in order to get past a financial crisis.
So 5 years out, the house is offered back to the one-time homeowner, now the renter. They have the chance to buy it at the prevailing market rate of that time. They can take it or leave it?
They can take it or leave it. In fact, they can move out at any time because mm-hmm. if they move out at any time, you're just back to the status quo ante, as they say. You're back to the mortgagee having foreclosed.
And if they take it, then they're back in the house. They've got it back. They can afford, presumably. This isn't going to be some bogus mortgage again at that point. It's something they can afford if they're going to do it.
Yeah, just look at an 80-20 kind of mortgage, 20% mm-hmm. down payment, or even a 10% down payment.
So the bank never has to write down the value of the home. The homeowner doesn't.
No.
They do?
the bank obviously has to. As soon as they take the home in exchange for the mortgage, they obviously are going to be holding a home that we just had a whole discussion of being
okay.
underwater.
Yeah.
They're going to own a home that's worth less than the mortgage.
So they have taken it, but it's not on the market, pushing the market down.
Right. So the pain, remember we were talking about pain on both sides,
mm-hmm.
right? Everybody takes responsibility. The bank takes its write-offs. The homeowner loses the deed. The only difference here is that you don't have that home being immediately put on the market.
So what's the advantage of this? Why aren't you just pushing the crisis 5 years out? Why don't we just build a cliff with this so that 5 years from now all the home values go kaboom?
Yeah, Diana actually answered that question already earlier in the program.
Oh, geez,
it wasn't direct. The answer was that we have continued household formation in this country. Our housing starts have plummeted to the point where there's not likely to be any new meaningful construction for several years.
Mm-hmm.
With normal population growth and a stable housing market down maybe 30% from its peak and normal inflation taking over after that, you're going to be in a situation where, especially since not all of these things are going to mature on exactly the same day. We're talking about a 4 to 6 year
mm-hmm.
window.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be in a situation where people are going to be able to come back in and, buy back into their homes. It's not a question of postponing the inevitable. I mean, one of the things you would like to postpone beyond is the current recession, and I don't think we're going to have a recession for 5 years.
We sure hope not, but here's the plan then. Let go of the deed, rent for 5 years, then have the option to buy it back. We can chew on this. It's an interesting way to look at the big problem right in front of us. We're going to get some pushback in a moment, but let's hear from our listeners first, if we may. Daniel Alpert is with us from Westwood Capital. He's got a big idea here. What do you think? Let's go to Jeff in Somerville, South Carolina. Jeff, you're on the air. Hi, Jeff.
I would like to thank you and everybody for the show, and I'm just very appreciative of how well-prepared you are. So I thank you very much for your daily ministration and your salient questions.
Thanks.
Most appreciated. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran. I'm a retired speech-language pathologist with 28 years of service to children in the school systems.
Okay.
And I'm living on a kind of a tight budget, to say the least.
You and a lot of others. So what do you think?
Well, I think this debacle is due to lack of responsibility and greed. And my frustration and my ire is due to the fact that we are letting people, to a certain extent, off the hook. Who knew when they signed their mortgage that they couldn't afford a $500,000 mm-hmm. mortgage working at a small local concern or McDonald's or whatever? I'm very upset that not only am I going to get taxed and be responsible to have to pay money mandated by law to bail out these people and the lenders, as well as my son and perhaps his children. So my question is, what securities do I have as the person who for over 30 years has paid for a mortgage, has done the right thing, and is now having to shoulder exceptional taxes and monies and for who knows how many more years to come without... I want to know what securities I have that hopefully that won't happen and that my children and my grandchildren won't be saddled with this because of irresponsibility and lack of monitoring.
Right. So what's in it for you who did the right thing and did the right thing on a tight budget with not a lot of room to fool around? Daniel Alpert, you hear the sentiment. Why let these people off the hook and what's in it for the guy who played, straight and narrow?
Well, I've been hearing a lot of comments along these lines. Certainly since the plan came out, and they're all very, very appropriate. The focus of the plan, of course, was to try to make sure that the person who took that irresponsible action loses his house, quite bluntly, and that to the extent that you're giving him something, you're just giving him time to try to work himself back into the ownership of a home. Because effectively his equity has been wiped out and he doesn't own the home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not that's a sufficient punishment for his bad acts, I can't comment. But it sure seems like some sort of rough justice.
Now, there has been a lot of bailing out, but your plan actually would, as I'm looking at it, would not involve tax money, federal money.
Well, there's some small element of tax changes that will be slightly revenue negative to the government, but not materially. I think the thing to keep in focus here, especially since your questioner just asked what he did, is we now own the bank losses. The Treasury and Congress have promulgated a plan which by necessity must be open-ended. They have to keep pumping money into the banks as losses keep going because they've deemed the banks to be systemically critical, that a loss of these major banking institutions will basically mean the burn down of the economy. And so if you take that position, as losses continue to come through on housing, and those continue to show themselves in bank losses, that gap needs to be plugged by the government. So we've just basically bought that loss. I actually have to confess I endorse that because I do believe that these institutions are systemically critical. However, having owned the losses now, I think we have an obligation to try to minimize them. And the purpose of this plan is to try to say, look, the worst thing you could have here is a complete meltdown in the housing sector. That's going to make the losses at the banking level and all other levels materially higher than they otherwise have to be. If we ignore this issue, as much as it's unpleasant to think that you're actually benefiting somebody who made a bad decision, the impact for the rest of us who already own this loss, and your questioner is absolutely correct, his children and grandchildren own this loss, is dramatic.
So the bone thrown to Jeff here and others like him is that without this, it could be worse and worse for everybody. Let's get a call from Hartford, Connecticut, and Renee. Hi, Renee. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a comment about what I've heard so far on your show. Mm-hmm. And as a person who has been a victim of foreclosure, I just wanted to say that it's not always that people who are struggling to keep their homes and end up in foreclosure, they're always irresponsible. People lose their jobs. And the other thing is that if you go through the process of foreclosure and you don't know what to demand out of the lawyer handling it for you, if you can afford a lawyer, then you're going to lose your home. And I think that we need to have a little bit more compassion for people. What happened to helping others?
Hey, there's always a place for compassion. Renee, have you lost a home? And if you had this option, would you have taken it, rent for 5 years and try and buy it back then?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You lost your home in foreclosure?
Yes.
That's got to hurt. Did anybody help you out? Is anybody offering you anything now, or are you just out of that home?
I'm just out of the home. And not only that, my children have to suffer the consequences. And at that, I lost my home because I lost my job. And guess what? I still can't find a job. So, I mean, I understand in terms of what the previous caller was saying about having to pay taxes that help out other people, and he feels like it's not his responsibility. I understand that. But we need to help each other so that everyone can live well. Everybody deserves the chance to be able to live well.
Renee, thank you very much for your call, and I'm sorry that you lost that house. Good luck to you and the kids there. Jenny Alpert, you're an investment banker. Is compassion part of your formula here, or just the numbers? Thank you.
Well, at some level, banking isn't just about greed. The fact is that we all have a responsibility not only to each other but for maintaining an economic system under which all of us can thrive. We have a real tragedy here, the likes of which is really a once in a 100-year type event. You've heard it directly from your questioner. This is a situation where people who made bad decisions, but people who are just being impacted by the current recession are losing their homes, and it's a tragedy.
And if we don't go further to something like you've proposed, if we just stick with what's out there now, are we going to turn this around, or are we in maybe for another giant chunk down in the economy?
Well, I think the answer is yes, I think we would be, but I don't think that's going to happen. What we need right now is a consensus of Congress and, of course, the new incoming president that this is as important as the Stabilization Act for banks.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're joined right now as well from Bethesda, Maryland by Guy Sicala, the CEO and publisher of Inside Mortgage Finance Publications. They put out the oldest and largest circulation newsletter on the industry, Inside Mortgage Finance. Guy Sicala, thanks very much for being here.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here.
So what do you make of Mr. Alpert's plan? There are a lot of plans out there, but what about the idea that we've got to put out a big life raft of some kind to save homeowners facing foreclosure?
Well, most of the plans are aimed at trying to accomplish, I think, too much. You know, really, you have to decide what the goal of a plan is. Are we trying to stabilize home prices as quickly as possible in this country? Are we trying to help homeowners? Or are we trying to help the banks and the financial institutions that are making all those mortgages? I don't believe that any one plan can address all those concerns, and you really have to zero in on which one you want to do. And it's further complicated. Let's say you want to help the homeowners. That's the primary choice. Mm-hmm. You want to keep homeowners out of foreclosure. The next question is, which homeowners? Do you want to do those who got bad mortgages, the subprime loans that have 10.5% interest rates? Do you want to do those who are just facing foreclosure, like the caller you mm-hmm. had, mm-hmm. due to economic problems? Mm-hmm. Or how about just homeowners who have negative equity? You want to help those. Most of the plans distinguish between that. They actually try to make some moral judgment on who should be helped and who shouldn't be helped. And to be honest with you, I think that's a fundamental problem. If you really want to stem foreclosures nationwide and you want to keep people in homes, you can't be picky about who you help.
Well, let me ask you, Mr. Sicali, if I may. First, we heard you on Morning Edition on NPR this morning, and I kind of heard you saying that you had trouble with the whole idea of bailing out homeowners. Maybe I had the wrong bottom line here, but it sounded like you were saying we need to let the housing market find a real bottom, and if you intervene, you may not have a real bottom that it can grow back from. It may be all, you know, just putting off the trouble.
That's exactly where I'm coming from on this. I guess I don't agree with people out there, including, you know, some of the people on your program here, that the housing market and the U.S. economy can't handle a growing wave of foreclosures.
You think it can?
I think it can. I think the existing system, it's going to be painful in select markets, and I think you could probably use foreclosure relief on a targeted basis, but I think it's a mistake to talk about it nationwide. You know, we are a nation of thousands of housing markets that have different situations. They have mm-hmm. different types of borrowers. They have different economies, to speak. And what you have to realize, too, is even though we're in bad economic times now and certainly terrible mortgage times, 90% of homeowners in the United States are current on their mortgages. They haven't missed one payment. They're basically doing fine. So what we're talking about is how do we address the 10% we have out there, and whether those 10% perhaps are going to go all the way into default. Are they going to hurt the other 90% and the rest of the economy? I'm not clear that we're not going to have unintended consequences from taking massive relief. You pointed to one of the more obvious ones is if you take thousands of properties and basically pull them off the housing market
yep.
now,
mm-hmm.
Are we postponing the problem for 5 years? I don't think we know that that's not the case.
Well, we'll get to the details, but let's go to this big question. With Daniel Alpert in New York, how about this argument? I mean, we're seeing numbers that say, you know, maybe 3 million or more homeowners may face foreclosure in the next year or two. I already quoted Martin Feldstein and Alan Blinder, big economists, saying this could be catastrophic. But Guy Sicali says, hey, maybe this isn't a crisis for the whole economy. Maybe we should just bite the bullet a bit, maybe.
Well, I would disagree, but this crisis has its roots in the notion that housing prices rose to unsustainable levels. We had at the peak of the bubble about $20 trillion worth of home value, of which $6 trillion is going out the door if prices fall by a total of 30%. That's an enormous negative wealth effect. Should that go beyond the $6 trillion and get down to even larger numbers because the housing market overshoots the mean?
Mm-hmm.
On
the downside, overshooting.
Yeah, on the mm-hmm. downside. Mm-hmm. It would be catastrophic. Now, you have to remember something about homes. Mm-hmm. About two-thirds of homes, or actually closer to 70%, have mortgages on them.
Mm-hmm.
Not every home. A lot of people have done the right thing and either didn't take a mortgage or paid it off long ago. So, you know, that $20 trillion needs to be reduced by a third or so when you think about how much collateral there is backing the $11 trillion of mortgages that are outstanding. And by the way, since the peak, the amount of mortgages outstanding has actually gone up a little bit because of negative accrual mortgages, negative amortization mortgages, rather. You're talking about with a decline of 30% in home values, you're talking about having the mortgage market as a whole be underwater. In other words, you'll have eaten into about $1.25 to $1.5 trillion of mortgages that are outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the bank losses come from. You can't look at the situation and simply say that, let's let this loss be absorbed, because, quite frankly, we've got to take care of it in order to bail out the banks. Our banks have been operating on the thinnest possible level of equity. They've wiped out their capital. And the only one out there in the world right now, literally the world, that's willing to plug that hole is the U.S. government and the governments of other countries at the banking level. And so we're in a situation that if we allow housing values to continue to decline and flood the market with an inventory that can't be absorbed for years, we're going to stunt this market. I'm not advocating artificial price supports. He's absolutely right in what he says about not wanting to be in a situation where we postpone the problem or don't allow housing to fall back to its natural level. But housing is going to fall back to its natural level even if we stopped every foreclosure right now. That's inevitable because people are no longer paying a premium for the notion that houses are going to go up in price. And so consequently, the only rational choice is whether or not you pay to rent or whether or not you pay to buy. The 30% drop happens to be the point at which the cost of carrying a home, bought a home that you buy with equity with 20% down or 10% down, is roughly the same as what you'd pay on an after-tax basis if you rent it.
Guy Sakala, what gives you the confidence that letting this go kind of on its own way wouldn't blow that massive hole in the side of the whole economy, bring on the catastrophe that some pretty big economists and Daniel Alpert are fearing?
Well, I think we're going to have to talk about whether or not we're talking about a problem that's on us now or one we're talking about down the road. Are we worried about the foreclosures we now have or the ones that we're going to be facing in 2 or 3 years' time? We're talking about bank losses they've actually seen now, or are we actually saying they can't handle the losses going down the road?
Well, it seems to be both. It's the combined wallop that concerns everybody,
but
I guess.
To answer your question, we've already had, given the inactivity we have in Washington and around the country, as everybody has indicated before, we've had plans out there to bail out home buyers, to do banks, but by and large, none of them have been really doing much for the last 2 years. We have housing markets in this country who have been struggling for 2 years. You look at San Diego, you look at the Las Vegas market, you look at some areas in the Washington, D.C. area We have areas that have already gone down 40% in home values. And those markets right now have booming home sales. They've got tons of foreclosures. They're being bought up by speculators, by first-time home buyers. Those markets are essentially stabilizing now on a minor scale. But I think it shows you that at some point where you've had massive foreclosures, you can have prices start to stabilize. It's low. These are prices at $150,000 when a home sold for $400,000 maybe as recently as 2 years ago. But it is possible to see that happen. And by and large, I think there are good points about, Daniel's plan, but realistically, Congress is not going to adopt that overnight. We're going to be using the reality of the situation is we're facing a patchwork proposals. They're going to use one little proposal here, one little proposal there. They're all going to be addressing different things, and we're not going to have any coordinated approach to dealing with the situation, even if that would make the most economic sense. But, politically, that's unattainable.
You seem to be describing a kind of forest fire solution. You let it go and the forest grows back. There's a lot of pain and some people worried, it takes down the whole ecology. Let's go to our listeners for a minute. Here in Nashville, David is calling. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hey, my question is, why are we not offering 40- or 50-year loans? It lowers the house payment, and if people are still in the homes, the penalty if they paid high is taken care of, and the banks are taken care of because the properties don't become a loss on their books.
So just stretch out the more... stretch out the mortgage period to 40 or 50 years and you see stability there. Daniel, how about it?
Well, I think the question is who's going to provide that long-term capital. The argument is not an unreasonable one, which is basically if you can't afford your debt or you're underwater on your debt and you still want to pay it, give people the way a way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that first of all requires somebody who still wants to pay his debt.
But there's an element of compulsion in your plan as well. If you're going to compel the banks to take these deeds and to accept 5 years of rent, that'll be compelled. There's constitutional issues there, I would think.
If you can
compel,
ones, yeah.
So if you're going to compel that, why not just compel them to change those 30-year mortgages into 40, 50-year mortgages?
Right, but that doesn't keep the borrower there. In other words, to the extent the borrower's been hit by the recession, or to the extent that the borrower just simply says, you know, I don't want to pay off a loan over 40 or 50 years on a price that on a house that's worth, 60% of what I paid for it, that doesn't make any sense to me. I'll just move. I'll go. You can have the house back.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't create the result that we're looking for, which is to not disrupt the social fabric, not disrupt the place where people put their heads, and not overload the inventory of homes to the point where we have a complete catastrophe in home prices.
Let's get a call from Ed in Swampscott, Massachusetts. Ed, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you see, Ed?
Well, my opinion on this is I don't think we should really be bailing out the irresponsible. As we all know, business cycles are cyclical. The real estate market is cyclical. The people that have saved and rented over the years have been waiting for this to happen so they could take advantage of that market.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't artificially be inflating the cost of housing now. They're irresponsible.
Ed, and what about Daniel Alpert's point he made right off the bat? He said, if you believe this is cyclical, then we shouldn't do a thing, but maybe this got torqued way out of bounds. Maybe this is artificial, not just cyclical, and so if there's no intervention, everybody's in trouble.
There's some reality to all the opinions,
yeah.
I believe, but you know, people like myself, I've been renting and saving for years, and now's my opportunity
right.
to get them reasonable price. If they have a bailout plan that's going to artificially keep these prices high, then that's going to move me out of the market. It's going to basically sacrifice the responsible for the irresponsible.
Right. Ed, we hear it. Daniel Alpert, how about it? Ed says, you know, he's been waiting for this moment. Don't change the cycle on him.
Well, he's going to have it. I mean, we're going to see, the only problem is that the only bad news I have is that in the Boston MSA, Metropolitan Statistical Area,
mm-hmm.
Home prices, really are not slated to retrench relative to rents as much as they are in other parts of the country.
Why not? Why not? Because of limited
just
new stock?
Just a peculiarity of the rental levels versus the home prices in that market.
Mm-hmm.
We have a report on that, which, welcome listeners to go to. It's at www.westwoodcapital.com, and it's under Research and Opinions, and it's called Putting a Floor Under American Homes, and it does address individual markets in the Case-Shiller Index, so people might be interested in seeing that.
Good.
However,
find it there. What about Guy's point that markets are already coming back? He says San Diego's it's foreclosure stuff, but it's booming back.
Yeah, booming is perhaps an overstatement. There are several poster child markets, San Diego, Tampa, Miami, where you've seen, you're going to see drops peak to trough that will stabilize at 40%+ from their peak, down from their peak. You're looking at those markets, and sure, there's speculative interest. I get emails from the Miami market a lot of, these auctions where you have a lot of Cuban Americans and other people from the Latin American community or from South America in general coming in and trying to scoop up homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of that. The fact is that our mortgage market has, if you look at the announcement today with regard to new mortgage applications, it plummeted.
Mm-hmm.
You see spikes, and any time you have a falling knife situation, people will be tempted to say, oh my gosh, it's fallen by 20%. What a great deal, and rush out and buy something until it falls by another 10. And then you get, it happens in fits and starts. So
and what about
I don't think there's an established trend at this point.
What about Guy Sakala's notion that, there's not going to be one great cosmic universal solution like you're proposing? It's going to be a patchwork. It's too much to hope for something as broad and universal as what you're proposing, Dennis.
Well, two points to that. First of all, he's not wrong. In fact, the plan itself is a patchwork. It addresses tax issues, it addresses banking issues, and ultimately addresses housing issues. And it actually requires inputs from a variety of different committees in Congress. And one of the difficulties with getting any sort of plan passed, and I think he pointed out in his earlier comment, was you need to have the political will. Either the president-elect is going to have to step up and say, you know, this is something he wants to see done, or people in Congress are going to have to treat this, I mean, in a way that's very different than they've treated it thus far. You have to remember something. We passed, or Congress passed, the ESA bill, the Economic Stabilization Act, in 2.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very complicated measure. It ended up being 410 pages after
the bank bailout.
After Secretary Paulson originally submitted 3 pages, right?
Yeah.
And it was very complicated. And of course, it was loaded up with all sorts of pork in order to get it done. But that legislation went through in 2.5 weeks. We have a lame duck session of Congress coming up. The biggest decision is whether or not this is something that Congress is going to take up during that session.
And the new president in a new administration. It sounds like we have not begun to hear the last of this, but you've prepared us well for what may be coming. Daniel Alpert with Westwood Capital joining us today from New York with his Freedom Recovery Plan. Daniel, thanks very much for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks very much.
And Guy Sakala with Inside Mortgage Finance, the newsletter. Mr. Sakala, thank you very much for your thoughts and time.
You're welcome.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.